All right, now let's go ahead and continue. During the break, it was brought up to me by Randy concerning healing and cloth. Let's go to Matthew, the 9th chapter, Matthew 9. And let's pick it up in verse 20. Matthew 9 and verse 20. Matthew 9 and verse 20. And behold, a woman who had been afflicted with a flow of blood for 12 years, after coming behind him, touched the hem of his garment. Okay? For she said within herself, if only I shall touch his garment, I shall be healed. But Jesus turned and seeing the woman, said to her, be of good courage, daughter, your faith has made you whole. And from that hour, the woman was healed. Okay? Now, can we not apply that also to anointed cloths? Since you can't come to the elder and the elder can't come to you, and today we have a telephone. So you can literally call for the elder over the phone, or if you're in Australia, you ring, okay? And you ask for an anointed cloth. And so there is special prayer given with that anointed cloth for that particular person, just as if the elder were there doing it, and it is the prayer of faith which shall save the sick. Now, that's the prayer of the elder, and that's the prayer of the individual combined. And all of this is within the greater scope of the will of God. And so that's how we do it. God has honored it, and that is a very practical way of doing things and fulfilling the word of God, using it correctly. Now, let's tackle another one where there is a misunderstanding. And that's why, before starting this out, I'm only going to review it, but I'm going to suggest read the Passover book, okay? Also, that will help you a great deal in understanding, because it's more than just about the Passover. It is what is the whole purpose of life. Now, let's cover another topic, which we need to understand, because these things make their cycles. Heresies come in cycles, one after the other, one after the other. And at the same time, what happens? Generations come and generations go. For some people, these things come up as new. For other people, they know what is true and what is not true because they've proven it by the scriptures. That's why I ask you to read the Passover book. There we have a quote from Josephus. Now, who was Josephus? Josephus was a Pharisee and a priest of the first order, or the first course. All the priests were divided down into 24 courses with part of the instructions that God gave to David when he gave him the plans and all the details for the things to go on at the temple, okay? He says there are 8 days of unleavened bread, very clearly. He did not say there are 8 days of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. He said there are 8 days of unleavened bread. So the question comes up, is the Passover day itself an unleavened bread day? And people in the past have practiced it, and it was taught in the auditorium. You keep the Passover, and then in the morning before, if you want to have toast, then you have toast, or if you want to go to McDonald's and get an Egg McMuffin, whatever, because the Feast of Unleavened Bread does not start until the Passover day is over. So let's examine some scriptures and ask the question. Let's come back here to Exodus, the 12th chapter. Let's ask some questions. What did God instruct the children of Israel to eat for the Passover? Exodus 12. Let's go there. Exodus 12. Now, let's also understand something entirely different than we are used to today. And you need to think in these terms when we come to chapter 13. We'll get there. Which is this. How do you unleaven and burn all the leaven in a city or a village before unleavened bread? And what was the practice that they did for the Passover? All right. We find here in verse, let's come down here. It talks about putting the blood on the side post and the door. Okay. Down here to verse 8. And you shall eat the flesh in that night roasted with fire. Exodus 12:8. And unleavened bread. So they have to eat unleavened bread. Okay. Then it says, do not eat of it raw nor boiled at all with water, but roast with fire its head with its legs and with the inward parts. That's the heart and the liver and the kidneys. Okay. Now, it doesn't tell us that they put all leaven out of their homes before the Passover, but it doesn't tell us that they didn't either. Now, how were they to travel? They had to take food with them. The only thing they took was unleavened bread. They didn't take meals or what the King James says, victuals. Where did they put the unleavened bread? In their backpack, packed up, correct? Yes. All right. So they ate unleavened bread for the Passover, and they could not go out of their house until sunrise. And during the day portion of the Passover, if they ate any bread, what bread did they eat? Unleavened bread, because that's what they took with them, correct? Okay. How many McDonald's and Wendy's were in Ramses? None. Okay. All right. Then it talks about unleavened bread for 7 days. Come over here to chapter 13. Now, the Passover day is also the preparation for the Passover. Now, we'll keep that in mind as we go forward. Now, let's pick it up here in verse 6, chapter 13. You shall eat unleavened bread 7 days. Is that in addition to the unleavened bread of Passover? Yes, it is. See? And in the seventh day, there shall be a feast to the Lord. Unleavened bread shall be eaten 7 days. There shall no leavened bread be seen with you, nor shall there be leaven seen with you in all your borders. Now that is all leavening agents, yeast, baking powder, baking soda, whatever, sourdough, all leavening agents. So how do you get rid of leavening agents? Well, you have to get it out of your house, right? And you have to clean out your house, and you find leaven and pieces of bread wherever you didn't expect to find it. Okay? So, the practice was this. When they got into the Holy Land, when it came time for the Passover, they would have crews go around and collect all the leaven to be burned before the Passover. So could anyone have eaten unleavened bread, a correction, could anyone have eaten leavened bread if all leaven were removed? No. Let's ask another question. We keep the Feast of Unleavened Bread because Jesus was crucified for us, correct? Leaven pictures a type of sin, does it not? Yes, it does. Jesus was sinless, was he not? Yes, he was. Now, let's come back here to Mark, the 14th chapter, and we're going to see something interesting as we look at the preparation for the Passover, Mark 14. Now, if you have a King James, it's obvious that the King James translators knew nothing about the Passover or the Holy Days because they make a mistake of inserting the Feast of Unleavened Bread the day before the Passover. Now, I cover all of this in great detail in the Passover book. That's why I say read the Passover book. Mark 14 and verse 12. We all know the Passover day comes before the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, right? Passover is the 14th, the feast is the 15th. each day starting at sunset and ending at sunset. Okay? Now let's read this, and then we'll come back over it, because I want to explain some things to you that this is a key that establishes the Passover day as an unleavened bread day. Let's read it. And on the first day of the unleavened, now that is a literal translation. Now we also know that the Passover that God gave to Israel was a domestic Passover with the killing of the lamb at the home. The Jews later combined that into things at the temple. And this is why there's so much confusion concerning this, and why it's essential that you read the Passover book and really understand it, all right? Because it's coming around again. Oh, it's perfectly all right to eat leavened bread after you have taken the Passover. And we will see that was not the practice. All right, before we get to the King James, let's go forward here. They were killing the Passover lambs. His disciples said to him, "Where do you desire that we go and prepare so that you may eat the Passover?" And he sent two of his disciples and said to them, "Go into the city." Jesus had it all worked out. The angels were there carrying out what they should carry out and putting the thoughts into the minds of those that needed to have it all ready. But Jesus did not tell his disciples one thing about it. So he said, "Go into the city, and you shall meet a man carrying a pitcher of water. Follow him." What do you suppose the water was used for? Foot washing. Okay? "And whatever house he shall enter, say to the master of that house, 'The teacher says, where is the guest chamber where I may eat the Passover with my disciples?' And he shall show you a large upper room furnished and ready. There prepare for us." Well, if it's furnished and ready, what is there? They didn't have tables, but they reclined. They had couches that they reclined on. They ate. Okay? They ate that. Okay? The unleavened bread had to be there to eat unleavened bread with the Passover, correct? Now, Jesus and his disciples did not kill a lamb. So that meant who had to kill the lamb? The head of the house. He killed the lamb. There is no evidence, mark this, no evidence whatsoever that Jesus or the disciples ever kept a temple-centered Passover. None. Let's go on. "And his disciples went away. When they came into the city, they found it exactly as Jesus had said to them, and they prepared the Passover." What did they do? Well, there may have been a place right there, right in the room, where they could roast the lamb. And the lamb can be very small. See, this is why lambs are born about a month before the Passover. So you can have a week old, 2 week, three week old, so forth, little lamb. And it was not to be over a year old, so it couldn't come from last year's lambing season. Now, what we did to test everything for the Passover book, we had a man, Skip, at that time, who had a ranch, and he had little goats, and he had two little kids. And so what we did, we went up to his place with a stopwatch because we wanted to know how long did it take to kill the lamb, skin the lambs, and have them ready to go. And it was an eye-opener for all of us who had never seen it. He slit their throat, hung them upside down, took a knife, cut them right down the middle of the belly, and all of the internal parts of the lamb are in one big sack, and they just fell out into his hand. Okay? Then he cut those loose, and then to skin it, he took his knife and went right at the edge of the cut, which was on the belly, right down this way, right down this way, and he put his hands in there, and I think he made a cut on the legs, and put his hands in and went whoop, 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 and the skin with the fur, all came off. So to do a lamb took all of 20 minutes. Now, since it was a small little kid there, how long did it take to roast it over a fire? Rotisserie, you have a hot fire going? You turn it? About an hour and 15 minutes. So when you get it down to being practical and you actually do it, you can see that it didn't take very long. Also, we did this. We wanted to know, since it says in Exodus 12, that of what is left over in the morning. Now, what is left over in the morning? Everything you didn't eat, plus the skin and the bones, you were to burn. Well, young lamb bones burn quite quickly. Whereas if you get an adult animal to burn the bone, it takes quite a bit longer. But it did take, we took part of the bone home, put it in the fireplace, put it in there, had the gas flame burning it, and in order to turn the bone into ashes was about another hour and 35 or 40 minutes. So you get the time frame involved. Okay? Now then, let's look at something here. Okay? They prepared the Passover. Now, verse 17, and after evening had come, that means after sunset. When was the lamb to be slain, according to Exodus 12? What is the term? Between the two evenings, which starts soon as the sun goes down, by Erev, it's gone. Sun is down. That's the beginning of Ben Harabayim. That lasts about an hour and 15 minutes. And it's getting dark. That's why you do not take the Passover soon as the sun goes down. No, you do not do that. You wait until it's getting close to getting dark. Then you start with the opening prayer and you start with the instructions so that by time you're taking the Passover, you're taking the Passover at night. Okay? Now, let's go back and analyze verse 12 a little bit here, because this becomes important. And on the first day of the unleavens, I'm going to get my KJV and going to read it. Verse 17, Matthew 26 and verse 17. Now this shows and reveals the complete ignorance of the translators of the King James Version, and they made many ignorant mistakes because they didn't know a thing about Judaism. They didn't know a thing about the Passover and Holy Days. They just assumed. And that's where a lot of problems come. Okay. This is why you might say, well, why did I ask the foolish question, which comes first, the Passover or the Feast of Unleavened Bread? Here's why. Matthew 26 and verse 17. Now, the first day, notice day is inserted in italics. If you've got a Bible reader there, it probably has it in italics. The first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. That gets you off the day immediately, doesn't it? Yes, indeed. Okay? It could not have been the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread because notice the disciples' question. The disciples came to Jesus saying unto him, where wilt thou that we prepare for thee to eat the Passover? Okay? Now, try this. If this were the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, then day 8, the Passover beginning the second day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, correct? Okay? That can't be so. Okay? The key is knowing there was a domestic sacrifice at home, and that the tradition of the Jews of Judaism to have a temple sacrifice Passover lamb is of their own traditional practices and not of God's instructions. Let's do that. Hold it right here. Okay? We'll be back to Mark 14 just a minute. Let's come to Numbers 28. Okay, here we go, Numbers 28. Now, Numbers 28 gives all the required sacrifices at the temple. And it starts out with the daily morning and evening sacrifice. Everything to go with that. Come down here to verse 9. And on the Sabbath day, two lambs of the first year without spot and two-tenths parts of flour for a grain offering mixed with oil and its drink offering. This is the burnt offering of every Sabbath besides the continual burnt offering and its drink offering. So they offered the daily sacrifice plus the Sabbath sacrifice. Okay? Beginning of your months, you shall offer a burnt offering to the Lord, two bulls, one ram, seven lambs of the first year without spot, and three-tenths parts of flour for a grain offering mixed with oil. For one bull, two-tenths parts of flour for a grain offering mixed with oil for one ram. And a separate tenth part of flour mixed with oil for a grain offering to the one lamb for a burnt offering and a sweet savor, an offering made by fire unto the Lord. Then it shows what they should do, verse 14, with the bull, with the kids and everything. Come down here to verse 16. Verse 16. Now let's read this. Remember, these are the commands for every required temple sacrifice. Notice the Passover very carefully, verse 16. And in the 14th day of the first month is the Passover of the Lord. What's missing? There are no instructions for a temple offering for the Passover day, other than the morning and evening sacrifice, which was to be for every day. What does this tell us? God never gave a command for the sacrificing of Passover lambs or the killing of them at the temple. Period. There is not one instruction in the Old Testament to do so. Where were they to be killed? The same as it was in Egypt at the house. And all of those people, and the men especially, were skilled in killing animals, skinning them, preparing them to eat for other regular meals, correct? Just like we did, we timed it. 20 minutes to kill it, skin it, and have it ready to put on the fire. All right, let's come back to Mark 14, okay? Mark 14. Now, I'm going to read it in the King James, okay? Verse 12 in the King James. And the first day of unleavened bread, when they killed the Passover, his disciples said to him, where will you that we go prepare for you to eat the Passover? All right. Mark 14, verse 12. Now, this is why it is important to understand the Greek, because this was written in Greek. Now, Greek is a very precise language, and I translated this according to the precision of the Greek. Now, let's ask a question, all right? Where were they before they started coming to Jerusalem? Well, Mark 14 and verse 3, he was in Bethany. Now, where is Bethany? Well, picture the temple here, picture a valley, and then the Mount of Olives, which is higher than the temple area, and picture coming over the top of the mountain is Bethany and Bethphage, where the priest and the Levites lived. Not all of them, but those that were in the area of Jerusalem. Okay? So, they were going into the city, which means they had to come to the top of the Mount of Olives. Were they at the temple? No, Jesus did not say, go to the temple and offer a lamb. He did not say that. What did he say? You follow this man into a house. At that time, they had probably the greatest majority of people keeping the domestic type Passover, although the Jews don't like to admit it because a Jew will never admit he is wrong. And my experience has been this. Little sidebar. I don't know whose tradition, vanity, and arrogance is worse. The Jews or the British, okay? They both talk down to people as if you are beneath us. And it's awfully hard for them to be humble, okay? Now, you don't assume humility by saying, well, I'm going to have a humble attitude. You become humble because you yield to God. And you maintain humility when you understand there is nothing that you didn't receive from God. And if that is not good enough, then you do the pen test. Put a dot on a piece of paper with the tip of that pen and look at it thoroughly. Because everything that you are is simulated by the size of that dot, because that's how big you were when you were conceived in your mother's womb. So what big uppity thing does anybody have to lift themselves above anybody else in arrogance and in pride and exclusiveness and elitism, because we are Jews? Never fails. Every time I meet a Jew, they say, I'm a Jew. Why? The next time that happens, I'm going to say, why do you say that? Are you proud that you've rejected God all these years? And likewise, if you meet a Brit, I'm British. Okay. Now then, this was one of these reading in bed, studying, understanding what it really was, and leaping out of bed very excited verses. Really? There it is right there. Okay. Which it is in the Greek. Okay. Let's read verse 12, Faithful Version, Mark 14. And on the first day of the unleavened breads, a literal translation, feast of and day, it says the first day of the unleavened breads, but feast of is not there. What? And it's speaking of the day that what? They were killing the Passover lambs. Now, where were Jesus and the disciples? Coming down the Mount of Olives. And what were the disciples seeing? Now, think of it this way. The disciples had not been told anything where they're going to keep the Passover. And what is happening? The sun is going down, the sun is going down, the sun is going down. And Jesus didn't tell them one word. So they got excited. And what were they seeing? When they were killing the Passover lambs, they weren't anywhere near the temple. What were they seeing? Where the lambs were being killed at the homes. Okay? Another thing. In the Greek, they were killing, they were is ethuon, which is present tense passive. They were killing. Not that they had killed or they were preparing to kill. They were killing. So this tells you what time of day that had to be. Sunset ending the 13th, beginning the 14th, correct? That's when would be the first time that they would have the opportunity to kill the Passover lamb. All right? Now, the phrase, the first of the unleavens, is the key. That's referring to the Passover day. And it is called what? The first of the unleavens, because why? They had unleavened their homes before the Passover. All right? So there it is right in the New Testament. Okay? Very important to know. Someone says, well, you can go eat leavened bread after you've had the Passover the night before. You destroy all the symbolism of the unleavened bread of the body of Christ. See? That's why it's a separate day of unleavened bread, not part of the seven. So we have perfect bookends with this, with the holy days. We have the Passover begins God's plan with the unleavened body of Jesus Christ. Okay? That is a separate day of unleavened bread, which is not a holy day. Why? Because of all the work that had to be done on that day. That's why. And because of what was going to occur to Jesus and the disciples. Do you think that the scribes and Pharisees would have called a judicial court on a holy day? Probably not. All right, let's go on. There's more for us to learn from this, okay? They were killing the Passover lambs. Present tense, we're seeing it happen right then. His disciples said to him, because they knew nothing. They knew nothing. Where do you desire that we go and prepare so that you may eat the Passover? Okay. And he sent his two disciples, said to them, go in the city, you shall meet a man carrying a pitcher of water, follow him. And whatever house he shall enter, say to the master of the house that the teacher says, where's the guest chamber where I may eat the Passover with my disciples? He will show you a large upper room furnished and ready there, prepare for us. So his disciples went away, came into the city. They were outside the city. Where is the temple? Inside the city. Did he tell them, go get a lamb from the temple? No. He said, go into this house. Follow this man. All right. And they prepared the Passover. Now notice verse 17. Now after evening had come, that's at the last part of Bein Ha'arba'im when it's beginning to get dark. Jesus came, he with the 12. And as they sat and were eating, Jesus said, truly, truly, I say to you, one shall betray me, even he who is eating with me. And they began to be extremely sad and said to him, one by one, is it I? And another, is it I? And he answered and said to them, the one who is dipping a morsel into the dish with me, he is one of the 12. Now, people have said because it's called a sop in the King James Version that it had to be leavened bread. And to this day, the Orthodox, Greek Orthodox, used leavened bread. And the way that they keep their communion is they have a loaf of bread and the priest breaks it off and gives it to the person here. See, anything but God's way. Anything but God's way. The Catholics have a wafer, and they can't use broken wafers. How then are they following with Christ where he broke the bread? And they do it in the morning, and they call it the Lord's Supper. Anything but God's way. Okay? Verse 21. The Son of Man indeed goes, just as it has been written of him, but woe to that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It would be better for that man if he had not been born. And as they were eating, Jesus broke bread, and after blessing it, he broke it and gave it to them and said, take, eat, this is my body. After he took the cup, after giving thanks, gave it to them, they all drank of it. And he said to them, this is my blood in the blood of the new covenant, which is poured out for many. Okay. I forget the exact reference, but I'll have to look it up. Look up the blood of the grapes in the Old Testament. It is not grape juice. Now, what I want you to grasp is this. Since the Passover is the most important thing for us to keep and renew the new covenant every year, right? That's the one thing that Satan the devil likes to change, pervert, substitute, misinterpret, and every evil thing against the Passover. Why? Because if he can get people to begin to move away from the Passover, then he has a key to bring in other things incrementally. And we've seen that happen. When did this Passover controversy start in Pasadena, WCG? 1974, at the Elders Conference. Introduced by Robert Kuhn, a temple-attending Jew, who introduced the thought that the Passover should be on the 15th. See, because Jews despicably hate anyone who does keep any of the days that they think is theirs. That's just a fact. So they don't want Christians keeping the Passover. So what did one of the leading evangelists do? He began to call it the Lord's Supper. Where did that come from? That came from Protestantism. Let's come to 1 Corinthians 11. Let's look here. All right? 1 Corinthians 11, and we'll finish here. I know it's not the Passover season, but I can guarantee you it's going to come up. Now, when we come to 1 Corinthians 11, having some knowledge of the Greek becomes very important because there are certain things of the Greek, especially here, that are not able to be strictly translated. And I'll show you about that when we get to it here. Okay? Now concerning, let's pick it up here in verse 17. Verse 17, now in this that I am commanding you, I do not praise you, because when you assemble together, it is not for the better, but for the worse. You ever gone to church, experienced that? Yes, we've all gone to church with a good attitude. Oh boy, there's going to be a good Sabbath. And what happens? Man, you come home like you ran into the back of a garbage truck. Okay? For first of all, I hear that there are divisions among you when you are assembled together in the church, and I partly believe it. And there are, you see. There are things that we don't understand. We need to grow in understanding as we grow in grace and knowledge. But we need to believe exactly what is given here in the Bible based upon the Greek, because that is the language that it was written in for the New Testament. Okay? For first of all, yeah, I believe it, verse 18, verse 19. For it is necessary that heresies be among you. Why do these come along? To test us whether we really know what we believe is a fact. Because belief without proof and without facts concerning things we need proof and facts is worthless. A person can say, I believe in Jesus. Really? Oh, I'd like to meet my live-in girlfriend. Well, that's 40% of those attending Christian churches today. You don't believe. It's necessary so that the ones who are approved may become manifest among you, so you can see who is teaching and following the truth and who is not. Okay? Therefore, when you assemble together in one place, now notice this, it is not to eat the Lord's Supper. Now, what does that mean in the Greek? The Greek has two words for negation. Me, M-E, which means not. Uk, which means not. What is the difference between the two? Uk means this shall never be in actuality. In other words, a complete elimination of it. Uk. Me is don't let that thought come into your mind. Just a little sidebar from what I'm going to bring the next time I come down for the helpers class. There are places where it is ooh, which is a shortened version of ook, and me. Ooh, me. Which means this. It is not going to realistically happen, and don't even have the idea in your head that it will. Guess what is used in Matthew 5:17? Jesus said, ooh, me. It's not going to happen. And don't get the idea into your head when he said, do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. A double negation so powerful in the Greek that those who say Jesus did away with the law are blaspheming him every time they stand in the pulpit and mention his name and say the law is done away. Now, in this particular case here, all right, it is not to eat the Lord's Supper. Don't even, it's not to happen in reality, but this is not ooh me. This is ooh, ook, the impossibility of it being so. Now why? Why can't you eat the Lord's Supper? when Jesus had the supper, what was it? The Passover. What did he say about that last Passover? He would not eat it or drink of the wine until it's renewed in the kingdom, right? So you can't possibly eat the Lord's Supper because you weren't there when it occurred. Number one. Number two, it's called the Passover and not the Lord's Supper. Okay, let's go on. So here's what happened, verse 21. Typical. Human beings, everyone wants to do what is right in their own eyes and tell God what to do. I've got a good idea. And there's even a man who visits us here once in a while. He insists that you have to have a meal with the Passover. Now, we'll see. That's not so. Except if you have the Passover in your home and you have a meal before the Passover. But that is not part of the Passover. That's separate. Okay, let's go on. So here's what they did. Yes, for an eating, everyone takes his own supper first. Now, on the one hand, someone goes hungry. On the other hand, another one becomes drunken. What a whoopee party they had for the Passover, huh? That is blasphemous because it's a solemn night. Now, notice what he says here, okay? Come over to verse 34. Should we have a meal with the Passover service? The answer, no, Paul said. Verse 34, if anyone is hungry, let him eat at home, so that there will be no cause for judgment when you assemble together. Eat at home before you come. See? Now, Jesus' last Passover was a little different. He had to finish the Old Testament Passover first before he instituted the New Covenant. But that eating of the meal was not part of the New Covenant Passover. We find there are three parts to it. One, foot washing. Two, breaking, eating of bread. Three, drinking the wine. Now, let's come over here to verse 25. In like manner, he also took the cup after he had supped, saying, this is the cup of the New Covenant in my blood. Do this as often as you drink it in the remembrance of me. Now, you could read that in English and you could say, well, as often as you do this, that gives me permission to do it as often as I want. There is what is called a particle in the Greek, and that is pronounced on, A-N. It is not translated. But in the Greek, this means there are limiting factors to the often as. What are the limiting factors that you can't do at any time that you want? Number one, 14th day. Number two, the time that Jesus took it. Number three, it is an annual event. So what does he mean, as often as you drink it? Okay. Question. Did they know when Jesus was going to return at this time in the ministry of Paul? No, they did not. And so he was referring to as often as you would do this year by year until the Lord comes. Let's see it right here. Verse 26, for often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you solemnly proclaim the death of the Lord until he comes. When did Jesus die? On the 14th day. What is a remembrance? A memorial. How often is a memorial? What if you went back to Washington, D.C. and said, I've got a new interpretation. We're going to have Memorial Day whenever we want. Any day, any time, over and over and over again. It wouldn't work. See, it says this, do in the remembrance of me. That is once a year. Okay? You solemnly proclaim the death of the Lord until he comes. And Paul did not have a clue that it was going to be over 1,900 more years until Jesus returned. See? So we need to understand that. So we're preparing ahead of time for this coming spring. I'm sure we'll have some difficulties come up. No way. No way. Question was asked, could this be read into English? Is it not to eat the Lord's Supper? No, it's not a question. It's a statement. And the ouk of the Greek makes it final. It is not. See, it has the force of this. Don't touch that. Yeah. So is that one of the reasons that someone would, has that been brought up to you that way? Yeah. In the English, you could kind of, you know, worm it around a little bit, but not in the Greek. Not in the Greek. Good comment. Comment was made concerning it's necessary for heresies to be among you, that ties in with Matthew 13 with the parable of the tares. God has a way of getting rid of them by scattering the flock. Because if you truly believe, it doesn't matter where you are, you're going to believe. If you truly believe, it doesn't matter who your friends are or are not, you truly believe. See? So rather than destroy everybody, God just causes there to be splits and divisions to clean it out, to test it up. See? And look what happens. You go over to this group and there's a whole body of tares. You come over here to this group and there are some tares and some wheat. Okay? What we're trying to do is use a little bit of spiritual roundup and not have them start. Okay, let's answer that question. Maybe I went a little too fast. In Mark 14, it doesn't say the Feast of Unleavened Bread. But if you go to Matthew 26, so if you turn to Matthew 26, I may have jumped ahead at that particular time and gone too fast, and you thought I was still in Mark 14. Matthew 26, verse 17. Now, the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. That's how the King James reads, okay? So it doesn't say that in Mark 14. But in either case, the Greek phrase, the first of the unleavens, that's what's used in the Greek. And that has to do with getting out the leaven more directly. But you see, those things come along and different ones, not knowing the Greek, see, that's why I did not even attempt to do any translating until I had studied the Greek for 17 years. And even at then, you need to understand, which I'm sure you probably do, coming from Armenia, there are 1,200 forms of the verb, each of them very particular and significant with direct meaning. Just like here in Mark 14, they were killing the lambs. See? Present tense, meaning it's being done. Passive, the action was being done to the lambs by they. They were killing. It could not be they killed the lamb, because the present tense shows that it was occurring, which then prompted the question, did the Lord forget the Passover? What are we going to do? We got to keep it. Lord, where do we go? Okay. Bread. Okay. The word bread is not in the Greek, the first of the unleavens. Okay. It's ton adzimon, which is the unleavens. Bread is artos. Not there. No feast and no bread. Okay. Now you know why I said read the Passover book. All of those things are handled chapter by chapter. For our overseas offices, please check our website, www.cbcg.org.